Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Melanie Cole's Health Radio. It's radio that's good for you.
October 4th through the 10th is Mental Illness Awareness Week, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness is urging Americans to take action. NAMI is the largest mental health organization working to improve the lives of people affected by mental illness. And it's calling on Americans to ask their legislators to pass comprehensive mental health care reform. Do you know someone with mental illness? Do you know someone who is bipolar? Someone who suffers from a mental illness? The stigma that has been surrounding mental illness for years, hundreds of years really, is such that I'm wondering if it's even breaking down today. We see more and more in the media about somebody losing it, as they say, and going on a rampage. My guest today is Andrew Sperling. He's the director of federal legislative advocacy for NAMI. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Fine. Thank you so much for being with us. Tell us a little bit about mental illness. There's still so much of a stigma, I think. Do you think that mental illness, people with mental illness, are automatically prone to violence?
No, they are not. In fact, they're more likely to be victims of crime than they are perpetrators of crime. But we do know, the science has told us, that there are risk factors associated, particularly with untreated mental illness, that can lead to violent impulses in rare instances. And so what are those risk factors? Well, it's number one is untreated psychosis, where someone who is getting no treatment at all and they're experiencing the symptoms of psychosis, which are auditory hallucinations and paranoid delusions, and particularly when it's mixed with comorbid substance abuse, they're abusing alcohol or drugs, their risk for experiencing a violent impulse is significantly escalated. So if we want to focus on this, we really need to focus on untreated mental illness and comorbid substance abuse. And in fact, the biggest risk of violence associated with people with mental illness is not toward another person, interpersonal violence, but rather suicide. We have 41,000 suicides in America today, 90% of which involve untreated mental illness. So it's more than double the rate of homicide. So we really need to focus on those risk factors associated with suicide and untreated psychosis.
Andrew, do you think that the media, movies, TV have perpetrated and put, if you'd pull back from your phone just a little bit, Andrew, have made it so that people are afraid? You see the homeless people on the street, and you know that many of them are mentally ill, and people get afraid that all of a sudden they're going to lash out. And that's where people are afraid of the violent reactions. And then we hear about school shootings, that someone just lost it and grabbed a gun. And all of these kinds of things are what people are afraid of. What do you want to tell the listeners about that fear and trying to quell it a little?
Well, there certainly is that fear, and it's certainly in popular culture. But we need to remind people that people, on average, people with mental illness are no more prone to violence than anyone in the general society. And what we need to do is engage these individuals to get them into treatment to significantly and dramatically increase that risk associated with any violent behavior. Treatment works. We've just got to get it to the people that need it.
So why do you think so many people with mental health end up in the criminal justice system?
Well, because of the very symptoms of their illness often lead them to engage in behaviors that can have them end up in the criminal justice system. So untreated psychosis, untreated depression, untreated mania can often times lead to people getting involved in the criminal justice system. And then, by and large, aren't for violent felonies, but for nonviolent offenses where inevitably the police have to get involved. So it's focusing on getting people access to treatment that will allow them to lessen those interactions with the criminal justice system. And we can also do a lot to train police officers. NAMI has a program called Crisis Intervention Training where we work collaboratively with law enforcement to better train officers in how to interact with someone who's experiencing untreated serious mental illness.
And the website is NAMI.org, NAMI.org. Tell us a little bit about treatment. And if someone has a loved one that suffers from ADHD or anxiety disorders, you list them on your website, bipolar, depression. There are so many mental illness, and people tend to think of schizophrenia as mental illness, but really there's a whole spectrum of them. What is treatment like these days? Do you have good treatments for these things?
We do. We do have effective treatments. They involve medication, and many of the newer medications we have They're not only more effective in treating the symptoms of mental illness, but they have much milder side effect profiles. These are medications that individuals need to take sometimes over their adult lifetime, and we want to make sure that we have newer, more effective products that may not be any more effective in treating the symptoms of mental illness, but have milder side effect profiles that help people adhere to their treatment. So we have made some advances there. We also have lots of other evidence-based interventions, such as peer support, counseling, psychotherapy, that really have been proven effective and really help people and complement that medication therapy to allow people to function at their highest level and reach some level of the word for what we're looking for is recovery, recovery from mental illness. It's possible. It works every day.
People are always hesitant. A lot of people are hesitant to get help for their various mental illness. Are these things recognized now? Is counseling, psychotherapy, all of these things, are they covered by insurance, Andrew? And should people seek out help? I mean, I think I suffer from anxiety disorder. I do. I worry about things with my kids. You can't imagine. But I exercise and I talk to docs and I, you know, but I have sought help for it before. What do you want people to do about seeking help? Who do they go to? And does their insurance cover it most of the time?
Well, they need to find a mental health professional, and in many cases, we do have primary care doctors, and we're trying to do a lot more to integrate especially mental health into primary care, but it takes training those primary care physicians. In terms of insurance coverage, we passed a law back in 2008 that we're only now really starting to implement on a widespread basis called the Paul Wellstone and Pete Domenici Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. Now, That's a mouthful. I apologize for that. But it's a law that simply states that health plans have to cover mental health and substance abuse treatment on the same terms and conditions as medical surgical coverage and health insurance plans. So we call that parity, at parity. And the law has been very successful in knocking down numerical treatment limitations on inpatient days and outpatient visits. And we're seeing more and more. We've had regulations that were issued by the Obama administration in 2013 that will make sure we get the full panoply of parity benefits, the non-quantitative ways in which health plans might cover schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, ADHD on different terms than they do diabetes and heart disease. What we want is equity, that you treat the brain just like any other. You cover treatments for the brain just as you cover treatments for any other organ of the body.
And it's such a great website. You have very comprehensive, gives information on so many of these. What would you like to tell the listeners about what they can do? And I know it's Mental Health Awareness Week, October 4th, but besides that and all year round, what do you want people to know about mental illness and what can they do to get involved to make the stigma just a little bit less?
Get involved with your local NAMI organization. We have walks all over the country. We do walkathons, and get involved with your local NAMI organization. And also focus in your local community, particularly on the public mental health system, the public safety net system that's there to serve, by and large, not people with a mild anxiety disorder or mild depression, episodic depression, but really people with the most severe illnesses like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, that are most at risk of the bad outcomes we see, which is experiencing chronic long-term homelessness, ending up in the criminal justice system, at risk of suicide. It's that population for which there's an enormous public health burden associated, not with treating them, but untreated mental illness. There's an enormous cost to failure to intervene early and failure to get treatment to people with the most severe illnesses that need it the most.
Thank you so much, Andrew. And the website again is NAMI.org, NAMI.org. Go there and learn more. Mental Health Awareness Week is coming up, but it should be really all year round. So NAMI.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening. Stay well and stay tuned. We're going to talk about keeping your pet healthy the natural way, integrative veterinary medicine. Stay tuned.
I'm here to tell you that Shelton's chickens and turkeys don't.
Okay, Andrew, are you still there?
Yeah, Melly. That went great. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, no problem. Thank you. I had to blab a little bit at the beginning because we lost it for a second there. But
yeah, You're very good at this.
Oh, thank you. Well, be sure and go on to Radio MD and download the podcast, take the link, and put it on NAMI's website, because you gave some really great information. So thanks again.
We certainly will. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. Young Ben? You screwed up. Your first time doing this. No, I'm just kidding. He lost the guest. He had such a crap-ass phone, didn't he? Okay, well, I was going to blame you, but since Ben's doing it, then I can't. I had to blame him. I need to blame somebody. I can't blame myself. So, yeah, it's 10 o'clock is when it starts, the 17th. And then lunch is at 12:30, and the lunch will be real good. And then you just have to be 6:30 at Dock 3 on Michigan and Wacker. Yeah, and you know what, guys? Last night in my dream, so many things were going wrong, and one of the things that happened was that you two did not show up. Sonar, I swear to God, if you don't show up for this, I am going to be so bummed. The Pulse of Health, Wellness, and Fitness. RadioMD.com. So there is no, like, oh, I can't come.
Tune in radio app. Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
A daily dose of Melanie means a daily dose of health. This is Melanie Cole's Health Radio.
Talking about mammograms, I get mine every year. I'm 51 years old, starting perimenopause. For women age 40 or older, getting a mammogram is a yearly ritual. It's like paying taxes. We don't always enjoy it. It's not that pleasant, but it only takes a few minutes. It's easy. It's quick. It's not completely painless, but it's not exactly bad. But, you know, there was the controversy in 2009. Mammography screening recommendations took an abrupt turn when the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released some guidelines saying that women ages 50 to 74 would reap the most benefit from biennial screenings every other year, not annually. And we were all worried that insurance companies would jump onto this guideline and start saying, well, we're only going to cover it every other year. It made a big showdown back in 2009 with gynecologists and physicians coming out against this task force. Well, so because of that, it's been going back and forth for a few years. They found that insufficient evidence to support recommending mammograms for those 75 and older. I, again, don't agree with this. So now, since 6 years recently, the task force released an updated mammography draft, and it's saying that women ages 40 to 49 should weigh the potential benefits and harms of getting their mammogram every year. I think this is something that's going to continue to be discussed. But right now, we know mammograms aren't perfect, but right now they're the gold standard. And I don't care who you are or what you believe as far as radiation levels. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of things that people believe out there. But we do know that mammogram helps more people than it hurts. We know this. Get your mammogram. I am personally saying ignore these recommendations. Talk to your doctor. Get your mammogram every year because it could save your life. Talk to your doctor if you have real questions. Go visit a radiologist. Ask them more questions about the low-dose radiation that you get from a mammogram. It is a simple, easy way to save your life. Get to know your own body as well. Do your self-exams, but get your mammogram. Talk to your doctor. And when you see some of these things, read them and take it with a grain of salt. That's my message today. So stay tuned. We have more great show coming up.